We're doing Tanya 200, and we're concluding the last three chapters of the first part of Tanya. The last three chapters, chapters 50, 51, actually 51, 52, and 53, return to the theme of the Tanya, and that is that the deed is of primary significance in the relationship with God. The doing of the commandment, the observing, the actual practice in the physical of the commandments that God gives us, that is the essence of the relationship, and that is the essence of the purpose for which we were created. Generally speaking, the results, what we accomplish, what comes from the physical performance of the mitzvah is a dwelling place for God in the lowest world. The Medrash tells us that God created the world out of a desire for a dwelling place in the lowest possible created condition, which means that a world in which God is not obvious, a world in which the creations, the creatures of that world, are not forced to recognize or be conscious or aware of their creator. This is what makes it a low world, or the lowest world. In such a world, God desires to have his dwelling place. Dwelling place meaning a place where God's essence can be revealed. In effect, God can be himself. What is himself? He expresses that and describes that. He describes himself in the Torah, in the commandments. This I like, this I don't like. This pleases me, this displeases me. This gives me pleasure, this gives me grief. So we know what God is by through revelation, where God revealed himself, bared his soul at Mount Sinai when he describes himself in the commandments. In fact, the word commandment can be a little misleading. A commandment means an instruction. But here, the commandments means revelation. So the Hebrew word for commandment, mitzvah, does mean command, instruction, but it also means attachment or connection. So when God wants to reveal himself at Sinai, he reveals himself in the form of mitzvahs, which means you can connect to me by doing the Ten Commandments, or the 613 Commandments, or the seven Noahide Commandments. So the word commandment means this is the way to get attached or to become closer to me. And which part of me? Which part of God are we talking about? Not God the Creator, because that's an external function of God, but the essence of God, the inner soul of God, so to speak, which are his commandments, which were given at revelation, not in creation. So that is the purpose for which the lowest world was created. That is our mission, to use the commandments to transform this lowest world into the highest world, to make it a unique dwelling place for God. Dwelling place meaning your primary place of residence. A person who is everywhere is also nowhere. God is everywhere, and yet God desires a dwelling place. Because being everywhere is the same as being nowhere. So a God who is looking for an intimate relationship is not content with being everywhere. He wants to belong, he wants to dwell, he wants to have a residence, a personal place where he is himself, and chooses the lowest world for various reasons, chooses the lowest world to make his primary dwelling place in. How does this happen? How do we make a dwelling place for God out of this lowest world? If we think about the meaning of the mitzvah, engaging only our mind and serving God only through thought, we have very little effect on the physical world, even on our physical selves, because we're thinking only with one of our garments, the garment of thought, which doesn't engage the animal soul or the human nature very much at all. And so the effect on the physical world is minimal. If we serve God by loving Him, which is a little more earthy, a little more tangible than thought, if we serve God by loving Him, by fearing Him, then we are engaging the emotions of the soul, but still we're not affecting the world around us very much at all. Even if we're changing our own personality, we're changing our inner character by loving God rather than loving ourselves, which is a great improvement of character, but it doesn't touch, it doesn't affect the physical universe at all. How then do we make a physical universe into a divine home? Through the act, through the doing. By using physical substances, which every mitzvah demands. To eat matzah on Pesach, you have to use flour and water and your teeth. To put a mezuzah on your door, you have to use parchment and ink and a door and a nail. And you have to do it with your hands. You can't do it with your intentions. To light a Shabbos candle, you have to use wax, and you have to use a match, and you have to use a candlestick, and you have to do it with your hands. And then when you say the blessing over the candles, you have to use your mouth. The body gets involved in the act of the mitzvah. Physical substances are used in the mitzvah. To give charity, you have to use money or food. And again, you have to do it with your hands. So the act of the mitzvah, containing the divine purpose, the divine desire for that act, is the way that we bring together the ultimate godliness with the ultimate physical substance. And that's how the world gradually becomes a holy place. Now, there are times when we don't feel. Actually, most of the time. Most of the time, we don't feel the divinity that we are releasing in the act of a mitzvah. We do the mitzvah, we fulfill our obligation, but we don't feel the consequence, the result, the transformation that happens as a result of the mitzvah. We don't feel it. We don't see it. We don't appreciate it. But that's because the world is not yet ready, not yet refined enough to be able to absorb this kind of godliness. Of course, if we could absorb that kind of godliness, we wouldn't be physical or mundane or finite to begin with. Because we are so finite, we can't contain or appreciate that which is infinite. But we are, in our deed, in our actions, we are releasing eternal and infinite godliness into the physical world. And when the time comes, with the coming of Mashiach, we will benefit, we will appreciate, we will be able to experience the godliness that we brought to the world through our deeds, through the act of the mitzvah. So even though we don't feel it today, our unawareness or our lack of sensitivity doesn't diminish the effect of the mitzvah. And over 5,759 years, we have accumulated a lot of godliness in this world that waits only to be revealed and appreciated. And so the Zohar says that God's presence in the world, the Shekhinah, acts like a like the flame of a candle burning over our heads. But to keep the candle burning, to keep the flame alive, we have to give it oil. And the oil in the candle is what keeps the flame connected to the wick. Without the oil, the candle would be extinguished because the flame would leave the wick. What is the oil that keeps the candle burning? What is the oil that keeps godliness connected to our physical bodies? The oil are the act of the mitzvah, the act of the performance of the commandment. Not the intention, not the study of Torah, not noble motives or lofty thoughts, but the act of the mitzvah. Which again tells us that the doing is of the essence, but it tells us something more. If the act of the mitzvah serves as the oil that facilitates the Shechina being present in our physical existence, there must be something about the deed that satisfies a divine need, that satisfies the nature of the Shechina, that enables it to be revealed and present as a result of the act of the mitzvah. How does the flame connect to the wick? What is the relationship between the flame and the wick? The flame consumes the wick and thereby burns in the physical. If there was no oil, the wick would be instantly consumed and the flame would disappear. So the oil keeps the flame connected to the wick by allowing the wick to gradually be consumed by the flame. And what that means is that the godliness that we are capable of, the godliness within us, thrives by consuming the human in us. In other words, when the human surrenders to the godly, when we are becoming refined from the human state, from the selfish, self-centered being, into the service of God, into the service of godliness, that is the consumption, so to speak, of the wick. And how does this consumption happen? Of course, when the human soul starts to develop godly feelings and godly characteristics, that certainly is consuming the wick and turning it into godliness. So if we are capable of transforming self-love into divine love, if we can transform our ambitions, our temper, all of our human traits, if we can replace them with godly characteristics, with tolerance, with patience, with humility, that certainly would constitute the transformation of the animal into godly. But not everybody can do that. Not everyone is capable of transforming a natural soul into a godly soul. For most of us, that will never happen. What we can do is transform the functions of the animal soul into divine function. Not animal emotion into godly emotion. That's too ambitious. And we're not all meant to do that. That's reserved for the tzaddikim, for the saints. How do we transform our functions, the functions of the animal soul? The functions of the animal soul, also known as the garments of the animal soul, are thought, speech, and deed. When we change our thoughts from unholy to holy, when we change our speech from mundane to godly, when we change our actions from natural human habit to the service of God, then we have consumed the wick, in that the garments of the wick, the garments of the animal soul, have been consumed by the godliness of the godly soul. So when the godly soul wants to do a mitzvah, and it always wants to do the mitzvah, when the noble impulse in us, when the good inclination in us wants to do the mitzvah, it has to engage the animal soul in the act. because without the animal soul, the body doesn't move. So in order to do the mitzvah, the godly soul has to prevail upon the animal soul to make the move, to give the charity, to eat the matzah, to light the candle, to affix the mezuzah to the door. And when that happens, then the animal soul's garments, its thinking and its speech and its actions, are now serving a divine purpose, which means they have been consumed by the flame of godliness, by the light of godliness, and have become themselves godly. And since they started off being human, natural, earthy, here we have the transformation of the lowest world into a divine dwelling, into a divine home. So the potential godliness that exists in the physical is released and revealed not when we think noble thoughts, not when we have great intention or emotion, but when we do the mitzvah in the physical. So the ultimate in the service of God, the conclusion of all the discussion about the nature of the soul and the nature of the animal soul and the nature of love and the nature of service, all of it comes to this basic conclusion. The mitzvah is God's inner will and wisdom. When we study the mitzvah, we are in touch with God's wisdom and with God's will. The pleasure that the soul has coming in contact with God's inner will and inner wisdom doesn't have a very good analogy. There's nothing in this world that we can compare it to. But if there's someone really important to your life, if there is someone really essential to your existence, and you don't know what that person is thinking or what that person wants, it is extremely frustrating, painful. To not know the thoughts and the wants of a person you can't live without is torture. To get to know the inner thinking and the inner will and the personal thoughts and feelings of the person you can't live without is a great pleasure, is the ultimate pleasure. To get into the mind, into the thinking, and into the heart of the person you need in your life, that is really the source of all pleasure and the greatest of all pleasures. So when we can study Torah and actually think God's thoughts and speak God's words and know what God meant or what God intended or what God desired, there is no greater pleasure available in life than that. And that's why the study of Torah is a great godly, divine, and satisfying experience. But in terms of the relationship with God, that is not the essence. It is the greatest pleasure that the godly soul can have, but that's not how the godly soul serves its creator. When we get to the doing, now that we know what God wants, now that we know what God thinks, because he revealed it, he stated it, he told us what he's thinking and what he wants in the Torah, and then invited us to participate in all of these things. He told us that the Shabbos is a sacred day to him, and then asked us to participate in the sanctity of that day. He told us that marriage is precious to him. The joining, the merging of man and woman, of male and female, is important to him. And then he tells us how we can do this, how we can join him in this union of male and female. When a man marries a woman, in the fashion that is described in Torah. So we not only know God's thoughts, but we are invited to participate in these mitzvahs, in these acts of divinity. the love that is inevitable because of the nature of the reflective heart. When we are loved, we love back. That love is aroused and inspired by the doing of the mitzvah, in that we can't be grateful enough to the King of Kings, who invites us into his inner thoughts and into his inner will, into his personal life. And with that love, we can fulfill the mitzvah to perfection. Because a mitzvah performed with love and fear is a mitzvah with wings. When we do the mitzvah with wings, the act of the mitzvah remains as divine as any act can be, because it serves God's need, and there's nothing greater than that. But with the addition of the love and the fear, with the wings added to the bird, now the mitzvah can fly, the mitzvah can rise, so that the perspective that God has in the mitzvah, what God sees in the mitzvah, what the mitzvah means to God, can now become a little bit more revealed to us, because the mitzvah rising lifts us with it, so that we can get a glimpse of the mitzvah from God's perspective. Or we can get a feel of what the mitzvah feels like to God, what the commandment feels like to the commander. And of course, that is a great pleasure for the soul, and also fulfills God's desire for a relationship with the lowest of creatures, with the human being, who is partly divine and partly animal. So at the conclusion of Tanya, where the Rebbe says that the statement in the Zohar that the oil that keeps the Shekhinah connected to the body through elevating the body or the animal soul in the act of the mitzvah, the wick is consumed by the flame, by the godliness, and it is consumed gradually, not dramatically, not instantaneously, because then it would not be a thorough process. It is a gradual elevation of the world, and it happens for most of us in our action, in our speech, and in our thoughts, because we are not saints, we are not meant to be tzaddikim, we are not meant to transform the character of our human soul, only the behavior of our human soul. And that's why the entire Tanya is called the Book of the Beinoni, because the tzaddik, who is a saint, transforms his soul, his animal soul, from a human soul into a godly soul. Or the human soul becomes part of his godly soul. The sinner, on the other hand, the opposite of the tzaddik, doesn't transform anything very much. So the animal soul remains as ungodly as it was at birth. It is the beinoni, meaning the person who is in between, something in between the sinner and the saint, something in between the tzaddik and the zasha. The beinoni does transform his animal soul, but not the character of the animal soul, only the functions of the animal soul, the garments of the animal soul, the thinking, the speaking, and the doing. So for us, putting the emphasis back on the performance, on the behavior, emphasizing the need to think godly, even though we don't feel godly, to speak godly, even though we may not feel godly, and to act godly, to do the mitzvah, even though we are not inspired or sensitive to the meaning and significance and holiness of the mitzvah. So in spite of the character of our animal soul, we use the garments of our animal soul. We harness the animal. That's an appropriate analogy. we harness the animal because of its power and because of its strength to serve the human need. We harness the human soul to serve the needs of the godly soul. So when the godly soul needs to do its mitzvah, out of gratitude to God for allowing us to do the mitzvah, for inviting us to do the mitzvah, then we harness the animal soul's behavior, its thought and its speech and its deed, so that it will participate in the actual deed of the mitzvah, which is the essence, and thereby be consumed by the godliness of the mitzvah, by the Shekhinah, and slowly the physical world becomes divine. It becomes a world in which God feels totally comfortable because His will is practiced, because His wisdom is known, because His purpose is being fulfilled. And so the world becomes godlier, holier, more hospitable to God's presence than the highest of heavens, where only God's light is appreciated, but not His inner will or thought or need or purpose. And that's why the lowest world is the most appropriate dwelling place for God, because we don't get distracted by the holiness and the greatness of God's light and of God's infinity, but instead hear God's need or God's want and understand the desire for a relationship, and for a relationship that involves the essence of both parties, and not only the thoughts and the intentions, but the essence itself. And we know what that feels like precisely because we are so far from God that there were moments, maybe there still are moments, when we actually think we are God. So having had that experience of thinking that we are God, when we study the Torah and find out who really is God and what God really wants, we are now capable of responding and fulfilling His will, not only with words, not only with feeling, but in actual deed, because the deed is really the essence.